welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Shaka Hislop. And with us today for the ride, we also have Yan Agafyortov and a new face for you. But you may have heard his voice if you are a La Liga fan. It's Rob Palmer. He's been the voice of La Liga in the UK for many years. I don't want to age you, Rob, but I would say decades. And, you know, covering La Liga, you've been on the Costa del Sol. You've been in cosmopolitan cities like Barcelona and Madrid. But today you come for us from the Holiday Inn in Doncaster. Welcome, Rob.
Yeah, I'm lying in a shopping park somewhere in the middle of the country in South Yorkshire. Glamour of television, eh?
It is wonderful to have you, though, Rob, especially with La Liga coming to ESPN. There's so much to talk about, and we must get started by talking about Lionel Messi. Now, we're talking about him, it seems, every day at the moment because of this situation with his contract. The latest is that it could be no Lionel Messi playing for Barcelona until January if they can't shift that wage bill that they need to do to make room to register him. This is a situation we could be looking at. Rob, in all your years covering La Liga, can you believe it's come to this?
It's quite unbelievable, isn't it? When you think a year ago it was a willy won't he, what was going to happen there? Messi seemed to be throwing a strop, and then they kissed and they made up, and then it was kind of glossed over when it came to the winter transfer market. It didn't go anywhere. Nobody could afford him because what was happening with the pandemic. And then he quietly signs a new contract after coming back from holiday in the summer. And then all of a sudden, a little bit like a Sunday league team or an amateur team, they can't get him registered. And you will know as well that it has happened in the past when it was Pedro Leon, wasn't it? It was probably about a decade and a half ago, yeah, when he signed it. And he wasn't allowed to play until the new year. So a precedent has been set. But there's a fair difference between Pedro Leon, who's a decent player, played for Real Madrid as well, and the great Lionel Messi, who we all want to see out there centre stage.
Yeah, big difference between the two, with all respect to Pedro Leon. That was back at Getafe then. Let's talk a little bit more about this, though. It's, what, 200 million they're looking to shift, and they're just having some stumbling blocks in doing that, because there are some players that they've managed to move on at the moment, but it's the big players, the ones that can bring in that big fee, that they're struggling to shift, Rob.
Yeah, I liken it to being in the supermarket when you've done your weekly shop and you've got there to the checkout and you've maxed out on your credit card and you're trying to put things back. Pjanic there, done nothing for Barcelona. Griezmann is the big one. He'll be the one that other clubs will be interested in. I thought he had a good Euros. Everybody's been linked with him, from Manchester City to Paris Saint-Germain to Atletico Madrid. Braithwaite as well, he'd be an easy one to move on, but he's not going to make a great deal of difference when it comes to the wage bill, which is what they're trying to lighten at the moment. Philippe Coutinho has never been a hit at Barcelona. He did well when he went to Bayern Munich for a while. And again, he's on massive wages. And they're trying to come to a deal with Samuel Umtiti where they sign him off and they know that he will have a suitor. He's only 27 years of age. Those are the transfer costs. But of course, the problem they have is they've got to get the wage bill down to around 160 million euros at the moment. And half of that is Lionel Messi. They've got the other 24 players to fit into the squad on the other half of the wage bill. You know, years ago, it was the manager, it was the coach who was the key man at the club. These days, it's the economist. It is the club's accountant who rules the roost, and come that weekend of the 14th and 15th of August, might well be picking the Barcelona team after he's done his algorithms and worked out all of the accounts as to who can play.
Because that's the situation that's interesting, Shaka. They've got until the end of the transfer window, mm-hmm, at the end of August, but obviously they want to get this resolved by kickoff. When you're looking at that 13th of August, they play on the 15th of August. How do you think this is going to impact their season with all this uncertainty going into it?
I really don't know. I don't know how Barcelona come to terms with it. I don't know how they balance their books. It will take incredible powers of convincing. If you look at it and you see a lot of Barcelona's talents that they have and maybe looking to shift some of the more expensive ones. Ousmane Dembele, he's out of contract next year. Why does he move now when he can move? Resisted a transfer last summer. Why does he move now when he can go on a free in 12 months' time? You've got Samuel Umtiti, who's got another 2 years left on his contract, young enough, but has had an injury plague season. You've got Miralem Pjanic with 3 years left on his deal. Who takes on Miralem Pjanic now with 3 years left? For Barcelona to move those players, they're going to take on a fair chunk of their salaries, as you would think. The one big one that they're working tirelessly in trying to move that frees up a lot of space is Antoine Griezmann, which everybody's been speaking about. But if you're Antoine Griezmann, and it's dependent on your moving, that Barcelona registers Lionel Messi, you control an incredible amount of power there. And now all of a sudden, never mind what you're on now, what you're earning now, you can manage the situation to your benefit as you please. You can basically hold Barcelona to ransom. And how does a club like Barcelona, a club as big as they are with their presence in world football, find themselves in this position? It is simply beyond me. I don't know how they got themselves in it. I don't know how they get themselves out of it.
Jan, it's a crazy situation, isn't it? And then it comes to the pay cuts as well. Players like Busquets and Alba and Sergio Roberto. Reports are that they're trying to arrange pay cuts with players like this and they can't come to an agreement there. And there is a thinking that maybe for these players, they think, well, we didn't get the club into this situation. They're the ones who haven't handled their finances properly. So why are we getting punished or why are we suffering?
Well, it's breaking news, isn't it? The financial rules also count in Spain. And I can't believe that the English club went into this Super League idea of the Spanish club, because that was an arrangement to save these clubs. Barcelona, Real Madrid, desperate for money, desperate way to get the finance for their big players. And then the English club say, OK, we'll make a part of it. Well, this is the problem when you have elected presidents. It's quite interesting when we discuss ownerships in clubs, because like in Germany, you have 50 plus one. So somehow the members secure it. And then you have, like for Bayern Munich, you have big companies who will have 25% of the shares and all that. In England, you have the owners and they could be bad owners. And we have a lot of examples of that as well. But I think that when you see in Spain and we're talking about, yes, this is democracy, Laporta coming back, they're doing their election campaign and so on. But they don't care because they know in 2 years' time, another idiot will come and he will spend all their money, because it's all about doing this success. And now, coming to 2021, you can't find yourself in a bizarre situation that, first of all, you say, Messi, Lionel Messi is in a 5 years deal and we need money for him. And as you were saying, Kay, why should the other players care? They got great contracts. Pjanic, 3 years left. Will he go to a Norwegian club for 3 years just to play football? Of course he won't. So this is not the sake of the football players. This is a very bad run clubs. And you may say that, well, Real Madrid have won the Champions League and everything, but there is some titles going on in the finances too. And there they are failing big time, and they are relegated now in the financial Champions League. And that's why they were so desperate for the Super League. And thank God that the English fans did an opposition against that. And we're not there yet, because then they will keep on doing the same thing. And now financial rules count in La Liga as well. Surprise.
Rob, how do you think this situation is going to play out at Barcelona?
I don't think anybody knows. I really don't. I think it's almost like they're having some kind of fire sale, aren't they? That, you know, come and get them. Take whoever you want. The only one they can't touch is Lionel Messi. Dembele, as the guys were saying, there would be a player that would maybe tempt a few clubs. You might get a bargain with Dembele. He's a decent player. But conveniently, he's going to be injured until October. Griezmann is the key to all of this, that they can get somebody to take his wages off the bill and then get some of the money back into the club. Coutinho doesn't seem to have many suitors out there either. What they're hoping is the likes of Neto, the backup goalkeeper, Longley, the centre-half, who apparently has been interesting, Everton, and Brathwaite, who may bring in 10 to 15 million euros, in the current market. But they'll go. But of course, every club, every chairman, every owner out there knows that Barcelona are trying to offload players. So they're going to cut a deal where they don't have to pay all of the wages. So Barcelona, who for many years were regarded as the model club in world football, they brought their young players through, they only signed in positions maybe where they hadn't bred somebody over the last decade or so. They would have a superstar like Lionel Messi who came through the system, and now they are a complete mess. There's no pathway for the young players. There's probably four or five players in the team who are maybe past their sell-by date, and then their best players are all for sale. It is, as Jan was saying there, an absolute mess that they've got themselves into. The big problem, of course, has been the pandemic. You know what it's like when you go to Barcelona, you go to the Nou Camp. This time of year, they're getting 10,000 people through the museum gates, looking at the museum. They're very clever. It ends in the club shop. I say shop, it's a mega store. It's like a mall in itself. And everybody leaves spending $100 at least in the shop there as well. Last time I was there, I bought my mum a bowl for her dog, which, by the way, is called Messi. And they've missed out on that for the last year. Right. No matter who you support, you've got to buy something on the day. And they've lost that commerciality.
Yeah, funny old thing. It's the same in the Santiago Bernabeu, that the tour ends in the club shop, of course. Speaking of Madrid and speaking of superstars, Rob, how optimistic do you think they are at Real Madrid that they will be getting Mbappe on a free in the summer of 2022?
Well, I think they dream of it, don't they? I was just looking back over the years, and as you were saying before, I think I've covered La Liga for the best part of a quarter of a century, and it's normally around this time of year that Real Madrid would be unveiling one of their Galacticos, be it Zidane or Figo. David Beckham came in July as well. It was Griezmann at Barcelona in July. This is normally the signing season, the unveiling scene. Barca are unveiling the players, but they can't give them a number. Real Madrid haven't had a Galactico for a few years, and Real Madrid have been managing things within. The big signings, last couple of big signings, they've made rather backfired on them, Hazard and Gareth Bale. So they've gone a little bit shy in the transfer market. But Mbappe coming in would really be a statement of intent. Look at the goals that he scored. That's Messi-like. That's Cristiano Ronaldo-like. This is potentially the best player in the world, in the globe, for the next decade. They would love him to be there so much. It would sell shirts. It would, not that they have to put supporters on seats, but it would announce that they are back at the top of the pinnacle of world football. But it's in the court of Mbappe. You ask any Liverpool fan, they claim that he's been going to Anfield for the last 5 years, where I live on Merseyside. But when it comes to Real Madrid, that's who they desire. They've got a year to sort their finances out, and Mbappe has got a year to keep a very straight poker face with the owners of Paris Saint-Germain.
You say a poker face. He had a big smiley face, we could say, not, when he arrived at PSG for training. But there we go. Smiles here, as you can see, once he's out on the training pitch. Jan, as Rob was saying, it is something that you make Real Madrid synonymous with, at least having one of the best players in the world in their ranks. And you know that's going to be something that's important for Florentino Perez. What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think it's the same discussion, like you said, we've had about, well, Barcelona. There are some financial rules that need to be followed. Is it quite interesting the last days that Bayern Munich, we can say, is one of the best-run club in the top of European football, and they couldn't afford David Alaba. So who took him? Well, Real Madrid took him, of course. They can afford anyone. And now they're waiting for Mbappé, and it's going to be interesting what's going to happen now, because you can't see PSG with Calafi and all their financial muscles, that they would just let him on a free next summer. And this is the same problem with Real Madrid. If we're going through their ranks, well, I'm talking about a player I know very well, Jovic, who came from Frankfurt. That was the next big thing, young player like Dembele when I took him from the Bundesliga. And he's not getting games. And sometimes you feel that Real Madrid is a place for young talent to go and die. But still, they have still some young talents there. And I think that it's the same for Real Madrid and Barcelona. If you're going to sell someone or get the big money, like for Barcelona, we didn't even talk about Pedri, who is like there is certain someone who will get him. Although I think Rob made a very good point. It's not the best time if you're desperate to sell players now in the pandemic, where a lot of clubs try to offload players and offload costs.
Well, we'd like to thank Rob Palmer for joining us. Rob, we'll let you get back to your five-star menu, put your feet up in your ensuite there in the hotel in Doncaster. It's been great to hear from you, Rob.
The likes of Doncaster on a Friday night, eh?
Oh, absolutely. How jealous we all are. If you would like to know the latest about Barcelona's situation and their financial woes in more depth, then check out ESPN FC over on ESPN.com. Sid Lowe with the latest story here. Not long to wait at all. Opening weekend for La Liga on August 13th. Bumper wall-to-wall coverage here on ESPN Plus. Make sure you don't miss it. So many games for you to see, all 10 of them. And we'll see who will be registered for Barcelona in time for their game against Real Sociedad.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jadon Sancho confirmed as a Manchester United player, a five-year contract which will take him up to 2026, €85 million, and he will wear the number 25. Mark Ogden coming into the show now to talk about this. So, Mark, what are the expectations numbers-wise, and what would be considered a good season considering such a huge price tag?
Well, I think Sancho has to come in and just make United more... as I say, sharper around the penalty area, create more chances with the likes of Cavani and Rashford. I just think he gives them the penetration down the right they've not had for a good while. And obviously, he's a top-class player. We didn't see enough of him during the Euros. I don't think England used him to his full potential. But you look at his record in Germany with Dortmund and the Champions League. He's fantastic. He creates chances. He causes problems for the opposition. So I think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will expect him to score goals, but I think he'll expect him to create probably more, because that's what his strength is. He will get at teams, he will get behind defences, and I just think he'll make United a much more destructive team going forward. So I think it's a big signing for Man United. It's taken a long time, but it's one that they've actually needed for a good period of time now.
Yeah, and how much does he actually elevate the ambition and the title aspirations, shall we say, of Manchester United? He alone.
Well, it's an interesting question. What should Sancho do for Manchester United? I think they have to get closer to titles. That is what Manchester United is all about. But I also agree with Mark. This is a player who excites you. I've seen him live so many times as I've been following Erling Haaland since he came to Dortmund. This is a cool player. Manchester United have signed one of the coolest players around. It's not enough. Manchester United need a centre half, maybe Varane or whatever. Maybe keep Pogba, maybe get a striker and so on. But this is a player that will make them more exciting to watch. Sometimes, I'm not saying United have been boring, because that is wrong word of it, but sometimes very predictable, and he will take people on, he will create goals, and I mean, the second part of the season in Germany, he was unbelievable. There was some problem after it was failed the transfer fee last summer, but then he came from January and out. He's been excellent, and I mean, England got to have a lot of good players. They're not playing that much, going all the way to the final, of course, without him, so to say. But this player will excite the English football fans, and it will excite Manchester United, who have been so after that kind of player, this kind of personality for a couple of 3 years.
He was incredible in terms of goals and assists with Borussia Dortmund. Xhaka, would you care to guess this season if he'll make it double figures in both of those categories?
I think he should make double figures in both. I don't think he eclipses what he did with Dortmund last season, 16 or 8. If I were to make a prediction right now on Jadon Sancho's return for Manchester United, I am going to go 9, maybe 10 goals. I'm thinking maybe single figures, and I'm going to go 13 assists. Let's go 9 and 13, so not double figures in both.
Jan, over or under on Xhaka?
Well, that depends, doesn't it? I mean, you need someone to, if you're going to do assists, you need someone to score the goals as well. When Özil was at Real Madrid, it was easy, just put the ball behind, not easy, but behind the back four, and Cristiano Ronaldo would score the goals. But I think that he will get double figures. I mean, that is in both, and he will create chances. Old Trafford is built for this kind of player. So I will go over Sancho, Xhaka on this one.
Oh, nice. I thought he was going to sit on the fence there.
So did I.
Mark, do you care to wait on it?
No, I never do.
Yeah, I agree with Jan. I think it all depends on who is in the middle of the penalty area to put the chances away. You know, if Cavani's fit, he'll score a few. Greenwood will score a few. You do worry sometimes if Anthony Martial's at the end of it because he can miss more than he takes. So I think Sancho would, you know, he'd love Erling Haaland at the end of his crosses, wouldn't he? But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But yeah, United need to make sure that if he's putting these fantastic crosses and assists and passes, the players that are capable of putting him in the back of the net. And sometimes with United, you're not quite sure. They do miss a lot of chances at times, so they need to sharpen up in all areas up front.
He didn't answer the question there, Mark. He didn't. He sat on the fence there.
He sat on the fence, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look, I don't think...
he's not getting off either, is he? He's not getting off.
That's all right. We'll get him later, I'm sure. But I do want to talk to you, Mark, about more transfer talk. Paul Pogba, lots of talk about him lining up with PSG. It's said to be increasingly unlikely that he will sign a new contract extension at United because of the interest from the Parisian giants. What's going to happen here? Do you think he's going to leave this season?
Well, you know, United would like him to stay. That's the public position on Pogba. They'd like him to stay because obviously you don't want to lose your best players. If you're Man United, you don't want to lose a player who has had a good Euros, top player, top brand, top commercial player, which is it matters now. But I think obviously behind closed doors, I've been told that United don't expect him to sign a contract. And I think if they can get a £50 million fee from him, like PSG is supposedly offering this summer, I think they take it because otherwise they're losing for nothing next year. Now, when Pogba becomes a free agent, he could stay at United. He could sign a huge contract to stay at United next summer, which is a possibility because United spend big on wages, but I'm not sure he'd give value for money. So I think publicly United will say he's not going anywhere, we want him to stay, but privately they would absolutely love to take a deal for £50 million for Pogba because I've been told that any money they bring in, they can spend on new players. So I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer might think, look, if I get £50 million for Pogba, that can help him strengthen with maybe one or two more players. And if you get those two players that make a difference, then they could be challenging for the title next year. I don't see United challenging for the title next year with the team they've got, with even if they get Varane in. If Pogba stays, I don't think Pogba is a title winner for Man United. I think he's, at times, he's a liability. Other times, he's a fantastic player. But I don't think he's the sort of player that United need right now to make them title winners. I think if they get rid of him, get a decent fee, spend that money on a couple of players, it could make a big difference. Look, I mean, the way I look at it with Pogba is like when Liverpool sold Coutinho, everyone thought, you can't sell Coutinho, he's your best player. They got a massive fee from Barcelona. And the money they got from Barcelona for Coutinho, Liverpool spent on Van Dijk and Alisson. And that was, they were transformative signings. Now, obviously, they're not going to get the same sort of money for Pogba. But if they can get £50 million, that could make the difference in terms of being second or first next season.
You mentioned Rafa Varane. Jan, I'm interested to get your thoughts on Rafael Varane joining this side. What does he bring to them? And does he make them a title contender? Does he help that out, that cause?
Yeah, it helps them. I think Lindelof is not good enough. Harry Maguire is good at what he is good at. And we've read articles or reports saying that they don't want to play with two number six. McTominay and Fred has mainly been set up to protect their two centre-halves. So I think that Varane is going to be a very interesting signing for them. We are told he's back in training with Real Madrid. He don't want to offend Real Madrid hierarchy, but he said he wants to. He need a new challenge. And there, you feel that when Ramos leaving, Varane, there is a new kids in town, and he will leave the club. But I think that could be a fantastic signing for Manchester United if they could get Varane, that type of player, exactly what they need, and that will make it easier to also compose that midfield that is not too deep. They can play one number six. They can have different players in there. Having said that, Mark, I think that if they can't sell Paul Pogba, it's all depend what kind of Pogba, which of them will stay. Is it that player that we see for France playing all the time? Or is this guy that's sometimes running around in the midfield of Manchester United? If they could sort him out, that would be great for Manchester United. But I think the breaking news, when we see his age, he's 28, Paul Pogba now. He has to stop this competition with Griezmann to be the link championship. Every summer is the same. Where is he going? Staying. And when the season starts, you know, is he playing? Is he not playing? So I think it's time for him now to either just sell him or sign that contract.
Mark, what do you think? Which Pogba we will be seeing, as Jan asked?
I think we'll see the Pogba we've seen for the last 5 years at Man United, the Man United Paul Pogba, because we never see the France Paul Pogba. But then equally, you know, when he plays for France, he's got world-class players around him. He's got Mbappe, he's got Griezmann, he's got N'Golo Kante, he's got Varane behind him. he's got world-class wherever he looks. At United, it's slightly different. So it's harder for Pogba to shine at Man United because I think more is expected of him in terms of the whole team. You know, I'm struggling to think over the last 5 years since he arrived a real kind of standout performance from Pogba, a game that he's actually taken by the scruff of the neck and won for Man United. You know, the kind of, when you look back on the likes of Roy Keane, Patrick Vieira, Steven Gerrard, all these great midfielders that actually make a massive difference in games or seasons, I just don't see that Pogba's ever done that. He's a great player, Paul Pogba. He's a great player in a great team. He's not a great player in a team that's still trying to find its way. That's where Man United are right now. So I think, you know, if he goes, when he goes, I don't think they'll miss him. I think, you know, I think the best thing is to get the money in now and try and spend it elsewhere and strengthen elsewhere.
One final piece of transfer talk then, Mark, and it seems to be going backwards and forwards with the rumours here. Harry Kane, what's the latest on his move to City?
Well, we know that City wants him, Pep Guardiola wants him, they desperately need to replace Sergio Aguero, but they're not going to do a deal at £160 million, the Spurs asking price. It's just not going to happen at that fee. You know, City's record signing is Ruben Dias, just over £60 million last summer. City aren't going to suddenly pay £100 million on top of that. Harry Kane wants to leave Tottenham, he'll go to Man City, he'd happily go to Man City. But the problem right now is that the numbers don't stack up. I think City would pay in the region of £100 million for Kane, but they might have to pay with a couple more players thrown in, maybe, you know, a couple of make-weight players. But I don't see City paying anything like £160 million. He's 28 soon. He's had a couple of injuries over the last few years. He does tend to miss, you know, two or three months a season every now and again. And, you know, he scored, I think, four goals at the Euros, had a decent Euros, but he didn't have an outstanding Euros. So I think City will look at that thinking, there's no way we can justify paying £160 million for a player that, yes, he's a great player, will score lots of goals, but there's no resale value on him. So they'll get that price down. They'll look to get it down by a substantial margin.
For more transfer news, head over to ESPN FC for the live transfer talk blog. And while you are over there, you can check out Mark Ogden's latest interview with Steven Gerrard. Here's a clip.
When he left Everton, for a couple of days, your name was mentioned with the job, and I don't think anybody actually thought you were going to go to Everton, but maybe the fact that Benitez has gone there is a bit of a equally surprising. I mean, how do you view that?
I don't think it's equally surprising because, you know, Rafa's not born in the city. He's not a Red through and through. He never played against Everton for 20 years and competed against them. So I think both situations are very different. You know, Rafa's his own man and make his own professional decisions. It was no surprise that, you know, he wanted to get back into the Premier League at a big club and have the opportunity to compete against all the top teams in the league. So I wasn't very shocked and surprised at all honesty, with Rafa. But I was very shocked and surprised that my name was linked to the job. I don't know where it come from, whether it was paper talk or there was any truth in it, I'm not sure. But it's never a possibility, as far as I'm concerned.
If you'd like to see more of this interview, go over to our YouTube page, look up ESPN FC, and for much more bonus content too, make sure you subscribe.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Now take a look at this. Seattle on top. LAFC in fifth. They lost last night to Portland 2-1. Now the Timbers play their games on turf as opposed to grass. And Bob Bradley talked about the challenges of a synthetic field after the game.
The turf is hard to play on. So plain and simple. You guys that watch football around the world, you should be able to see the differences in the way the ball bounces, the timing, everything when a game is played on a top grass field that's wet, where the ball's moving quick and fast, and then on turf where there's all sorts of rubber and it bounces up all the time. So that's not easy. You deal with it. I wait for the day when every field in the league is perfect natural grass, where teams do a good job watering before the game and at halftime. It will make the games better. It makes the quality of play better. It's not talked about enough, and it's, you know, it is what it is. When you go to places and play on turf, you have to prepare. You understand the way the game is going to be played. But unless more of you see the differences in these games, it's not about coaches complaining about it. The decisions as to what kind of surfaces we have in the league get made on a higher level than the coaches. I think if you ask probably every coach in the league, everyone would say exactly what I'm saying. Now, the guys that coach teams where the home stadium is artificial turf, they can't say what I'm saying right now because that wouldn't work. But behind the scenes or anonymously, they would all agree, I promise.
Yeah, picked up quite a bit of chat on Twitter. Taylor Twellman said what Bob Bradley says is 100% about games on turf. As someone that played home games on turf, I wore different shoes, I played differently, etc. Players and coaches all talk about it. Now the Timbers will be grass before you know, because Paulson, Portland's owner, wants it. MLS reporter Paul Tenorio also weighed in, saying turf in Vancouver, Portland, Seattle, New England, Atlanta and Charlotte soon. Number of turf fields going up, not down, in MLS. Jan, how bad is it to play on turf?
Well, I think you have to... I agree with Bob Bradley. What he's saying, I think coaches and players, they are all alike. They will say that AstroTurf, I think that is a different sport than playing on grass. You can use a metaphor saying that in an AstroTurf, when you speak to an AstroTurf as a footballer, they just say, hi. It doesn't say anything. It's the same thing all the time. On a grass pitch, you can play with the grass. You can think of what the grass will tell you when you try to do something. And you can't do that with the AstroTurf. I'm come from Norway. I mean, we have a Tromsø is nearly with Santa Claus, some of the games. Those kind of stadiums, they could have the AstroTurf. I also think that AstroTurf is good for people with developing players. It's good for kids. You can use the pitches 24/7, but on a top level you should play on grass. I think that you will see that players that only play on AstroTurf, they don't develop in the same way. We have a big problem in Norway because we have so many AstroTurf pitches that agents, clubs come to our country, look at our talent, and they say they play a different kind of sport, a different kind of football, take on people. This is difficult to be defenders on AstroTurf, and so on and so on. So I think that the concern that Bob Bradley is having, I 100% agree with him, and I think that is need to be seen at, because I think that the Football Association should make sure that everybody on the top level of our game should have a normal grass. AstroTurf is not grass.
Shaka, how do you feel about it?
Totally agree. Listen, I think AstroTurf has its place. Jan mentions in the colder climates such as in Norway. I'll talk about the heat of tropical countries such as in Trinidad and Tobago. It also has a place in schools and where whoever's maintaining the pitch, it doesn't have the kind of funding that it needs for a full grass field for its upkeep. So there's a place for those pitches. But to Jan's point, and he's absolutely right, a game on turf is a completely different game from a game played on grass. Whether you're on the field, whether you are an experienced watcher off it, you can see the telltale signs of how different the game is. And I feel it's a far lesser game, and it restricts play at the highest level. We're talking about MLS here, and to that list of teams who have or do play on AstroTurf pitches, a number of them share the stadium with NFL teams in their same city. As a matter of cutting costs, as a matter of managing their own balance sheets. So while on the one hand I do sympathize with their position in that they are trying to save money, as a league, MLS isn't making isn't turning over a huge profit. But if there is a way that teams, and I think more and more teams, need to start moving into soccer-specific stadiums, and if you do that, they have to be grass. As soon as you can afford to move into a soccer-specific stadium, in whatever city you are at, you're in, that has to be grass to accommodate the game at the highest level. Other than that, you're just playing a lesser version of what soccer/football truly is.
Well, let's get you a game that was played on grass. Orlando against Philadelphia Union, two of the Eastern Conference's top teams in action here. And we'll start in the 10th minute. That's when the first goal went in.
What's Nani's hairstyle? What's that?
You don't like it?
No!
This is Benji Michel with the opening goal for Orlando.
It's a nice finish. Nice clean take.
Not
slides it past the keeper.
Then they doubled the lead. Nani crossing it to Perea. He heads it in.
It's a good ball in. Hairstyle and all from Nani. Good header.
68th minute. Philadelphia do manage to get one back. It's Bilko. Makes it 2-1.
This is a really good finish because that ball comes at him quickly.
And we've got a nice save for you late on, Xhaka, from Pedro Gallese. They saves Jack Elliott's shot. Then Glynn centres the ball. Quinn Sullivan's shot is blocked by Cal Smith.
Good save here. And then the ball across. You think, surely, that's good defending.
Nice stop.
Yes. With a smile.
So Orlando snapping a three-match winless streak. They jumped 2 points clear of Philly and Nashville for second place in the East. But it was only the Union's second loss in 13 matches across all competitions. Lots of games for you on Saturday and Sunday here on ESPN+. You can see them all here. This is the MLS schedule for the weekend that is coming up. And the US women are in action tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. They will take on New Zealand in a must-win game. And we will be reacting to that game on tomorrow's show with Ali Krieger. Also on tomorrow's show, Xhaka will be looking ahead to the USA Jamaica. Make sure to always catch ESPN FC. It's available daily on ESPN+. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that will do it from us here at ESPN FC. Thank you so much for joining us. Stick around, though. Extra time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Xhaka, we've also got Jan and Mark Ogden with us as well. We'll get straight into it by asking you, Xhaka. At the moment, would you take Riyad Mahrez or Jadon Sancho for a right winger position?
Riyad Mahrez.
Why?
I just think he's proven it time and time again for a longer time. He's done it at two clubs. And I'm assuming here we're talking about one player for right now. We're not talking about Sancho's age or prospect. We're talking about one player right now. I think Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah, and there's no way that you agree with that, is there?
Well, after I've changed my middle name from Jadon now, so I take it away. But I agree with when Mahrez has shown us on a higher level for a longer period in two clubs. So Jadon Sancho there to prove it now. But what I've seen from him in Germany, and I've seen him so many times live, Manchester United fans, enjoy yourself. This is going to be a ride.
Oh, nice. Okay, Mark. Very, very funny asks, has Arsenal gone bonkers trying to sign Ben White for 50 million and Aaron Ramsdale for 30 million?
Yeah, I do think that 30 million for Ramsdale is a bit excessive. He's had a couple of seasons in the Premier League. I think he's been relegated all the time, so that's not a good omen for Arsenal, is it? I think Ben White is a good investment in the future. I think Arsenal need a top quality defender. He's got potential. He's got promises. He's got leadership qualities. So I think they are wise to pay that fee for Ben White. But I think Ramsdale, that's a lot of money for a guy that, you know, has not got the best record in the Premier League over the last couple of seasons.
Next one for you, Jan, and it's from Divyansh, who says, Jan, does the Bayern financial structure showing its limitations now with Alaba gone on a free and stalling new contract negotiations with the likes of Koeman and Goretzka, surely any other club wouldn't have let Alaba, who's in his prime, depart, especially on a free?
Well, this is a very good question, because this is a big thing now in Germany, because you have in Bayern, in the structure of the wages, you have Neuer, you have Lewandowski, of course, and you have Müller. So they have been around 20 million euro. And then you have these other players who are not on the same money. Alaba said, I want to earn the same. And then they say, well, you've been here 10 years, we won't pay you that. And then they say, okay, adios, I'm going to Real Madrid. And now Kimmich's contract is up 2023. Goretzka's contract is up 2022. And Goretzka, for all, is saying, I want the same money. I want around 20 million. And then you have the problem, because that structure is so easy to keep. And Bayern will say, well, Goretzka, Kimmich, you are the player for the future. You are the guys we're going to build the new generation around after the old ones, around 30 that I mentioned, will go out there. And Manchester United, being clever, of course, they're going to team Goretzka and saying, listen, if you have any problem, we can pay you more. So this is a big challenge for Bayern, because they want to seem that they have a good, sensible financial system, but then they could end up losing two of their most vital and best players. Having said that, I have to say that at the end, Kay, that both Kimmich and Goretzka want to stay at Bayern, but the big money that sometimes decide where a player goes.
Yeah, of course. VD Blaugrana says, Xhaka, on any given day, would you rather have Messi or Ronaldo in your team?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Why?
No, I'm asking Cristiano Ronaldo, Brazil.
On any given day,
Lionel Messi. Over Cristiano Ronaldo, right. No question.
Okay, what about Brazilian Ronaldo? Lionel Messi or Brazilian Ronaldo?
On any given day, I think at his best, at his most unplayable, Brazilian Ronaldo is better than Messi.
Brazilian Ronaldo or Ronaldinho?
Brazilian Ronaldo. I'd take Brazilian Ronaldo over, on his day, at his best, I'd take Brazilian Ronaldo over anybody.
Guys, what do you think of Xhaka's power rankings? I'll start with you, Mark.
Well, I mean, Brazilian Ronaldo is a sensational player. You can't argue against that. And I think, sadly, people tend to remember him for what happened in the World Cup final in 1998 and the injuries, but he was an absolutely sensational player. And it's unfortunate that his time came before, you know, social media, because it was sensational. It was... You know, I've got to agree with Shaq. I think he was such an exciting, explosive talent. I don't know if people have seen, the younger generation have seen the goal he scored. I think it was at Deportivo La Coruña or against Vigo or for Barcelona. This guy, he gets the ball on the halfway line, does a drag back, beats about seven players, waltzes in the penalty area, dribbles past the goalkeeper, scores. I think Bobby Robson was the manager at the time, and he just looked at the skies and just to say, I can't believe I've seen that. People should look at that on YouTube. It's such a sensational goal, and that shows you what a player Ronaldo was, the original Ronaldo.
Compostela, it was. Well, go on then, Jan.
I will go Cristiano Ronaldo instead of a Messi. I would start there. I think that Cristiano Ronaldo shown in years after years, like Messi, but still, Cristiano Ronaldo did it at Manchester United, he did it at Real Madrid, he's doing it at Juventus. And so if I'm going to take him to another club, if I'm going to take one of them, I would take Cristiano Ronaldo. And the Brazilian Ronaldo, I will say also what he did it on terrible pitches. When you see some of the pitches where he's doing his magic, is unbelievable. I think what is so great, though, about Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo is that they have done it over so many years. I mean, we can take a Romário, Ronaldinho, or Brazilian Ronaldo, but they didn't do it for so many years. The level of goals and assists is just like unbelievable of these two superstars we have at the moment.
Jan hates Messi.
And he's, you know what? He's not got a picture of him on the wall behind him.
That's right, he doesn't.
And I think that that is
I've not seen... That's, you're right,
Kate. Messi picture on the wall?
Nothing.
Nothing, no. Jan.
It's my son's room. And if you see here...
So your son hates that Messi
is,
too?
No. That is Beckham. And if you see there... That's there, okay, there. LeBron James, you see him there? With my son and Thierry Henry. It's no Cristiano Ronaldo, there is no Messi. Mm-hmm. No, only
yeah, I think Messi, I bet Messi's behind those shirts and he's just covered him up.
He's moved the Ronaldo photo to his bedroom. Kay. That's what it is.
That is, no. then I should take David Beckham. I think my wife would like to have David Beckham in the bedroom.
Oh, it's a family show. Let's move on, shall we? Madara says, Shaka, why isn't Iniesta one of the GOATs? He won 4 Champions League and was man of the match in 3 of those finals, won Spain their only World Cup by scoring in the final, and won back-to-back Euros.
I absolutely love Andres Iniesta. Absolutely.
Boy, he loves everyone. No, but
here's what I don't understand. Why every time we have an outstanding talent, we have to label them a GOAT or the GOAT. By definition, it's the greatest of all time. So it's supposed to be one. Yet every single 2 weeks we have a new GOAT. I don't understand it.
But you change your GOAT quite often, don't you? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So you're the one who's changing it every 2 weeks or not?
Because I find the whole concept in a team
sport
ridiculous.
He loves everyone.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's sitting on the fence, I think.
No, I'm just saying, no, the concept of having what... It's a team sport. And by virtue, individual awards are totally contradictory to this being a team sport.
All right. Dan asks, Jan and Shaka, after it was revealed that Shaw played through the final 3 games of the Euros with broken ribs... Did you ever play through injuries when your teams needed you badly, Jan?
Oh, I mean, when you see back, I played in 4 different countries. I played 600-700 games. I can't remember one game I played feeling fit. I mean, that is just the name of the game. But I think I got a quite good story. We played Barnsley at Newcastle, and it was not Shaka in goal because the goalkeeper there made a rebound, and I thought if I score on this rebound, I can slide into the ball, but I will hit the post. So I decide, as every goal getter will do, I slide in, I score, I hit the post, and I'm taken off. This is 5 minutes before the end, and I'm sitting in the dressing room, and of course Alan Shearer will score the 2-1, so we lost the game. And I was sitting there with all these pains, and when we came in, the other players asked me, did you touch that ball, Jan? So I felt I would never go through a barrier like that again. but you always feel like you're playing with injuries. That's what you do.
What about you, Shaka?
I can tell you the day. February 22nd, 2004, Portsmouth played Liverpool in the FA Cup. We won 1-0. I saved a penalty from Michael Owen. I broke my finger in the warm-up. I remember the day because it was my 35th birthday. I broke my finger on my 35th birthday. So I didn't know it until got home after the game. My hand is still in pain. Go for an x-ray on, so the game was on a Saturday, go for an x-ray on the Monday, and the x-ray showed that I broke my finger and just the ligament was holding the bone, or some little cartilage, something was holding the bone in place.
So did you, when you were playing, was it the adrenaline, or was it just feeling painful, your finger?
I don't remember having a whole lot of pain. I remember catching the ball awkwardly and thought, that hurt, but played on. As Jan rightly says, 90% of the games you play with some kind of pain somewhere. And that was just one of those. I was only when I got home at night and realized it's not easing up. And then went into training the Monday morning, went for Harry Redknapp, was the manager, sent me for an x-ray. X-ray showed that it was a break at the top of my knuckle.
Can you remember who?
Okay, we have to.
Sorry, 1 second, Jan.
We have to...
Who started the goal for Portsmouth?
No, who scored the goal?
Who scored? I cannot.
We need to... Richard Hughes.
Oh, okay. Richard Hughes. Yeah. I remember Hughes.
Yeah, it was just there in the back of my head.
I'm sure it was.
Jan.
I'm sure it was.
Now, I'm just thinking it should be a rule, Kate. When we two are in studio together, we have to talk about Borough. And my first game for Borough was I've told the story before, but my first game for Borough, and I got a kick in my over my eyes. And I thought I was sweating, so I played the last 30 minutes and I took it sweating away and it was blood. So I looked like Terry Butcher at the end. We won 3-1 and I came into the dressing room after the game and Brian Robson looked at me and he said, "That is the attitude I want in this club." And I was having a look at myself in the mirror and I saw a guy that I've never seen before. This was a Viking and I was nearly fainting and I was thinking, okay, gaffer.
It's a normal night out in Burien. You're lucky. It's a normal night out on the town in Middlesbrough. That will have definitely endeared you to the fans.
Macmillan's. You couldn't get in at that time, Kay.
Thank you, yeah. Definitely far too young to be getting in any nightclubs at that time. Abu says, Shaka, if you could have played behind any defence, which would you have chosen? Who's in your ideal back four from your teammates? Ooh. So that's two questions, really. So first of all, if you could play behind any defence, maybe ever, shall we say?
Maybe ever? That's a good question.
It's interesting. Should we make it a set defence? So it's already, say, let's say it was Milan's defence or Barca's defence.
Right now it's hard to look past Chiellini and Bonucci, given what they mean to today's football. But you look back at some of those Italian defences in the past and it's hard to pick one.
All right.
If I'm picking out of players who I played behind, I'm going to go two Pierces as centre-halves, Ian and Stewart. Trevor Sinclair as my right back. I'm going to go John Beresford as my left back.
Oh, nice.
That's my back four. We won't keep many clean sheets, but it'll be a whole lot of fun.
A whole lot of fun. Well, that's what matters, eh? Mark, Lawrence asks, which sport is everyone looking forward to in the Olympics? And it's cheating if you say football.
Which sport is everyone looking forward to in the Olympics? Good question. I like the swimming in the Olympics, but I'm just kind of a bit worried this time it's going to be very quiet with no crowds there. But I do like the swim because it's always very tight at the end, very close. But the Olympics is kind of second billing for me to the World Cup. So, I can take it or leave it, to be honest.
What about you, Jan?
Well, I'm desperate for the Olympics. I love my sport. There's not a lot of... In the Summer Olympics, there are not a lot of Norwegians, but we have a favourite in the 400-metre hurdles. His name is Carsten Warholm, and 2 weeks ago he made a new world record. In America, they will know Edwin Moses as the legendary athlete there. So I'm looking forward to the athletics. I love the athletics and see all the different kind of thing they're doing there. I'm a big, big fan of sport, and I'm looking forward to the Olympics.
I'm with you on that one, track and
Me
field.
Too. I'm only looking forward to track and field, and specifically this year, the women's 100-meter final, which I think is the most hotly contested of the races this year around. You've got Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, Elaine Thompson, two Jamaicans, winners of the last three Olympic gold medals, Brianna Williams coming through, who is the heir apparent, also Jamaican. The Brits have a young lady who name escapes me right now. That, more than any, is the race to look forward to.
You've got quite some Olympic knowledge, right, Shaka?
Well, I'm a very fast runner, Kay.
Did you used to host an Olympic show?
So Alexis Nunes and I covered the Olympics in 2016 for ESPN Caribbean. So we were there in Brazil I did everything from gymnastics to the sailing to the track events. It was something. I was in the stadium for Usain Bolt's 100-meter win.
Wonderful.
Wow.
I was there.
Wonderful. Well, last question is for you from Kevin, Shaka. It says, would Jan the player have survived playing in the heat of Trinidad and Tobago or Texas as Shaka had?
Listen, I don't know how anybody survived in Texas, I'll be honest with you. The truth is, the game's just different. The game's a whole lot slower because you cannot run as you do in England or in Europe in that kind of heat. So the game is far slower, far more technical. So you figure your way around. Asking if Jan can survive in the heat is the same as asking if I could have survived in the cold. And I made it through. I survived.
You made it through.
That's as much as I can say about it. I'm not going to say any more. I survived.
It's talking about the northeast of England. Yeah. Jan, how do you deal with hot climate? How do you deal with the hot weathers and hot temperatures?
Well, we tried that out in the 94 World Cup in USA. It was unbelievable, the heating. And it didn't. The Norwegian team, who were a lot of runners, and we have a very intense game, okay against Mexico, and then we lost against Italy. The heating was enormous, as Xhaka saying, that the game is slower, but Xhaka, I would have done my goals, you know that.
I'm sure you would have.
Texas, worse than Trinidad and Tobago.
Yes, for the heat. Texas is dry, it's humid, there's no breeze at all. At least in Trinidad and Tobago, you can look forward to a nice cooling breeze every so often. Texas is a stifling heat like I've never experienced.
Where's the best food?
Oh, Trinidad and Tobago is the best food.
I thought you might say that. Thanks so much for joining us on the latest edition of Extra Time. We thank Mark, Jan, and also Xhaka. And don't forget, you can catch ESPN FC daily on ESPN Plus.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.